Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back here on The Punch Out, 17th of November, 2021. Very happy to be back with you here on the show. And as always, we got plenty for you here on the show. We're going to be talking about some retrospective research on the impact of expanded unemployment insurance during the pandemic here in the U.S. We're going to talk a little bit about the so-called rise of the Islamic State across Africa. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we want to start with a question. Are the cops really stopping crime? One major issue in the U.S. right now is policing. Whether or not we need more police or fewer police, how effective the police are, and whether or not we need to adopt different attitudes, practices, and structures to truly have public safety. In that regard, a new scientific review of a 2017 study suggests the role of the police is not, in fact, central to public safety. Now, the original study that they were reviewing had looked at a slowdown of police officers in New York City in late 2014 into early 2015. That study made headlines because its conclusion was that major crimes actually went down when the police pulled back, which is clearly the opposite of what we are always told to believe about fewer cops in quote-unquote high crime areas. So again, the thesis was that the pullback itself was responsible for the reduction in quote-unquote major crimes. Now, this new review of that study casts some doubt on the findings, but not quite in the way you might think. Now, they make a range of points regarding the methods used in the first study, and then re-examined all the evidence. The new study also agrees that major crimes were, in fact, down, so no disagreement there. What they did in their re-examination of the evidence is they looked at the areas where there were a bunch of cops and also areas where there were fewer cops. Now, as they note, if the pullback of police officers was the cause for the drop in major crimes, you should see a bigger impact in the places where there were more cops rather than less cops. But what they found is that, in fact, there didn't seem to be much of a difference. In fact, their conclusion was that the lessened police presence did not cause the decline in major crimes, but also that the presence of more police before and after the slowdown did not seem to be playing a role in either lowering or increasing the number of major crimes either. In other words, flooding the streets with cops or pulling back a significant amount of aggressive police presence on the streets did not seem to be a controlling variable in serious crimes going up or down. In statistical terms, that means that the police have a quote-unquote null effect on the fluctuation in major crimes. And another final way to put this is whether serious quote-unquote major crimes, murder, rape, things like that go up or down is not in fact determined by the number of cops on the street. That's something we're thinking about as city governments around the country push for more money for the cops, allegedly, to keep us safe. Kampala, the capital of Uganda, was rocked by two suicide bombings yesterday within 3 minutes of each other. And so far, the death toll, as we go to press, is 3 killed and 33 wounded. As Al Jazeera reported, quote, one of the explosions was on a street near the parliament building and the other near a police station. The explosion near parliament appeared to hit closer to a building housing an insurance company, and the subsequent fire engulfed cars parked outside, end quote. The Islamic State took credit for the attacks late on Tuesday, and the attack in Uganda has continued to fuel a conversation about the alleged rise of ISIS and related groups in Africa that underpins the rationale for interventions across the continent by Western countries and their militaries and the security policies that they drive with their proxy forces on the continent. The Ugandan blast comes just after 32 military policemen were killed in Burkina Faso by groups said to be linked to either IS or Al-Qaeda. That was on Sunday. And in fact, the same day, Tuesday, as the blast in Uganda, 25 were killed by yet-to-be-identified gunmen in Niger, where conflict has been raging for years involving Islamic State-related entities. That attack comes after the Islamic State's West African province took credit for a raid in Borno State in Nigeria recently as well, which killed a general in the Nigerian army. The Nigerian army also hit back for that earlier this week, claiming they killed 52 Islamic State members in a counteroffensive. And this all comes about a month after the official end of a Western-backed operation executed mainly by the military of Rwanda in Mozambique against a shadowy armed group said to be linked to ISIS. The perception of a major quote-unquote terrorist threat is the main reason U.S. and European governments cite for their military missions and arms deals in various countries in Africa. But when we drill a little deeper, it raises many questions that point toward a very different set of motives for this so-called security strategy. All the areas at issue have similar, broader context. Deeply impoverished regions within countries of great wealth, where that wealth is almost totally siphoned off to international corporations in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Australia, and to a tiny handful of local elites. And this comes along with little to no social services or public services or real economic prospects. For instance, in Borno State, in Nigeria, that we previously mentioned, 50% of the children are severely malnourished and poverty is over 40%. And that creates the space for armed groups to capitalize on deprivation and unemployment, as well as ethnic and religious discrimination. Some groups, like the Islamic State West Africa province that took credit for attacks in Nigeria, have sophisticated alternative state-building strategies that have attracted support for being more effective at facilitating commerce and so on. Others, like the Islamic State Central Africa province that took credit for the Uganda bombings, have a hazy strategy that appears as likely to be an attempt by warlord-like power brokers to exploit illegal mining, logging, poaching, and the imposition of taxes for their own gain. And there are also many rumors floating around many of these groups in the African continent that some of them are created by the elites themselves to help drive these conflicts and put more guns and money in their pocket in the guise of fighting terrorism. And many of these groups adopt the Islamic State designation to project strength, but almost all of them have ties to the Islamic State that are fairly tenuous to, quite frankly, totally undocumented and perhaps not even real. But it does help the governments that they are challenging because they can use the quote-unquote anti-terrorist designation to launch brutal repression without really addressing the underlying causes that are pushing people to take up arms. And since these governments are quote-unquote fighting terrorism, the U.S. and other Western nations cynically use that to push huge arms sales that help prop up the repressive power of these governments that they use not solely and oftentimes not even mainly against the so-called terrorist, but against those in their own countries that are pushing back against this very unequal status quo. The end result, however, ends up being that these governments do not defeat the armed groups, become complicit in their own brutal behavior, and that activity actually fuels the armed uprisings even further, and you enter into a downward spiral of death and destruction. And of course, these people have no desire and no willingness to address the underlying issues previously mentioned around poverty and development, because of course, they're the result of their very own elite enriching policy choices. And this is really an important fact of it all, the important fact of it all. Whatever the nature of various armed groups and insurgencies, the quote-unquote anti-terror campaign across Africa is really a smokescreen for a broader policy of domination by neo-colonial governments and their international enablers. Rather than address the underlying issues from poverty to climate change and corruption, quote-unquote terrorism is used to avoid real conversations and real solutions to problems all across the continent. It's the Trojan horse for military power from abroad to maintain inequality and exploitation. Improving security on the African continent will require a major change in the broader global economic system, something to remember as various tragic bombings and attacks are used as clarion calls for more guns and troops. The National Employment Law Project has taken a comprehensive look at the impact of expanded unemployment insurance on the lives of working people during the pandemic, finding a range of notable things. One important one is that the expanded unemployment benefits made a big impact in reducing poverty. As the National Employment Law Project notes, quote, according to the Census Bureau, access to unemployment insurance reduced the official poverty rate from 12.9% to 11.4%, preventing 4.7 million people, including 1.4 million children, from falling into poverty in 2020. And they go on to note that, quote, the Bureau of Labor Statistics compared households that received unemployment benefits at some point in the pandemic with households where a worker applied for benefits but did not receive them. The Bureau of Labor Statistics found that successful unemployment benefit recipients were significantly less likely to experience food insecurity, have difficulty with household expenses, fall behind on their mortgage or rent, or report symptoms of anxiety or depression. And they also noted, regarding the whole controversy over whether or not the expanded benefits held back employment growth, that while in Iowa, unemployment did not fall after the expanded benefits were cut, in Nevada and New Mexico, who kept the benefits, unemployment did in fact start going down. They also detail how one major factor in all of this was most state unemployment systems were totally unable to cope with the big increase in claims created by the pandemic, and that years of underfunding and budget cutting meant that the programs were far less effective than they could have been because of the challenges signing up for and providing the benefits. Overall, they note that what this all shows is that unemployment insurance has to be permanently changed rather than being kept down to a bare minimum to allegedly make sure people don't become quote-unquote dependent, and that instead, higher benefits available for longer periods for a broader pool of workers with better provision to unemployment insurance agencies not only should be established, but would play an important role in lessening the poverty and hardship caused by the normal functioning of capitalism. That's the punch out for today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York, East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles, Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.